The hour of 10:15 having arrived, we'll call the meeting of the House Tax Committee to order. We're not quite at a quorum yet. As soon as we are, we'll take care of some housekeeping issues. We have a full agenda today. And members, the Tax Committee is going to be hearing some bills, and it'll beg the question that I will have eventually is, how do we pay for this? How do you propose paying for this? But as far as some of the bills we'll be hearing the next few weeks, we're going to hear the bills, and they'll be laid over for possible inclusion. It'll be the Tax Committee's job to figure out if there's something we do want to somehow fund. And I don't have details on those issues today by any means. And that'll be coming from a corner on a floor, two floors above us down the road here. So rather than talking about financing today, we're going to be talking about issues today that have to come before the Tax Committee.
Thanks.
And so when it does come time, if we do have some funding sources freed up, we'll be able to move because we've heard these bills. So that's what we're doing today. I will move if Representative Fabian could come to the desk. We'll take the two Fabian bills first, House File 1842. When we have a quorum, I will actually move that bill. So members, if you could please take out 1842. I don't believe there's any amendments to it, so we will start working. Okay. Yeah, and if Ms. Templin could be on call to come up for any revenue notes to explain those to the committee for each bill, we will want, or Ms. Schill from House Fiscal, we will want you to come up and explain the numbers for us. So when we have a quorum, we'll actually officially move these bills for possible inclusion. So Representative Fabian, I will, when we have a quorum, move House File 1842, but if you could describe what the bill does, what you're trying to do here, and then we will open it up for questions. First of all, on the Fabian Bill 1842, is there anyone in the audience that wishes to testify on behalf of or with concerns on the bill? Representative Fabian, please present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is my first time before Tax Committee, so I've done the necessary gratuity, I'll say. All right. So. Why? Thank you very much. 1842 is a relatively simple bill.
Fabian, you didn't actually expect that I was going to pass these around, did you?
You, Mr. Chair, you know, you have complete latitude in committee. You do whatever your conscience dictates.
Okay, right? Thanks. Okay. Representative Fabian, to the bill.
Thank you very much. This is a relatively simple bill. What we're trying to do here is make it easier for small business owners who purchase capital equipment to be able to get the sales tax credit in a more timely manner. In the bill, you can see that capital equipment, if you are looking on page 1, lines 1.12, this starts the description of what capital equipment is. This is not an expansion of any government, of any program that's in place now, but what we're trying to do is allow for small business owners who maybe not have the luxury of having accountants and tax attorneys and so forth working for them. When they purchase their capital equipment, they are going to be allowed to get their tax refund immediately at the time of purchase. So they don't have to go through the refund mechanism. What this will do is it will free up some time administratively within the department where they have to process these claims. It will speed up for small business owners. It will make it more efficient for them. They get that tax credit right up front, and I'm just trying to do some things that will help our small businesses continue the progress that we've made. And with that, also, the definition of a small business, 20 or fewer full-time employees, they have a fiscal no more than $1 million in gross revenues. If they're in a technical or professional service, they have gross revenues of no more than $2.5 million. So I'll take any questions that you may have, Mr. Chair and Committee.
Thank you, Representative Fabian. First of all, before we get to member questions, I'd like Ms. Templin from House Fiscal to come forward and explain the a revenue estimate on House File 1842.
Hi, Cynthia Templin, House Fiscal. Mr. Chair, there's a revenue estimate for House File 1842. And this it shows the estimated revenue loss for the elimination of the refund requirement for small businesses. About 95% of the revenue loss is to the general fund, but in total there's an estimated revenue loss of $9.1 million the first year, $6 million the second year, and $3.7 in the third year. What else? The one important kind of revenue analysis detail that that's in the document before you is that revenue estimates that small businesses account for 8.5% of the total share of all the capital refund equipment claims. So what you see again is just the revenue impact for the small businesses at $9.1 million the first year. And again, the cost does kind of scale out over 3 years.
Questions for Ms. Templin? The gentleman from Dakota, from Garofalo.
Another person here from Dakota. Thank you. Mr. Chairman, Ms. Templin, so in effect, with these, when we're reading the revenue note and we see the revenue loss, is it correct to say that this is just a shifting of revenue, though, that in terms of over the long term, we're simply, it's a matter of timing as opposed to actual dollar amount?
Mr. Chair, Representative Garofalo, yes, that is correct. Businesses have 3.5 years from the date of purchase or lease to file a claim for refund. And so that's why you see over roughly 3 years the revenue reduction and how it lessens over the 3 years.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Garofalo. Any question? Other questions for Ms. Templin from House Fiscal? Okay, thank you. To the bill, Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Fabian, thank you for the bill. I support this concept, and you may not know there's been a long bipartisan support, tradition of the legislature and the House supporting this concept, but no success in getting it through. So just to maybe for your information, in 2009, the House Democrats actually passed this, not for 8% of the businesses, but for everybody. Unfortunately, Governor Plenty vetoed it, but there were some other issues in the tax bill, I think. That's why he vetoed it, not for this provision. And I think in 2010, the chief author of this bill was Representative Hillstrom. And so this has had a long bipartisan tradition of understanding, as Representative Garofalo just said, that it's kind of a one-time gimmick, shift that allows the state to have a little more revenue to balance its books. And so I know, Mr. Chair, last year, you had it in your bill, and it was dropped in conference. And so I think we broadly in this committee understand this is a good tax policy, and it's, of course, the trick is paying for it, and I know the chair didn't want to go into that, so I won't, because you're trying to hear the concepts, and so I think people like your bill as a rule. But why not everybody? I mean, I get that you've got the small businesses, and, for those of us who represent districts with all the big businesses, they would like this treatment as well. Why not just do it for everybody?
Representative Pavian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Lincheski, thanks. I appreciate your comments, and I might add, too, that I'm a member of the Small Business Caucus here in the House. Representative Downey can address that a little bit, too, but this is one of the bills that we brought forth as a caucus because it does have very broad bipartisan support. I, too, represent a lot of large businesses. I'm proud to say that in my district we have Marvel Windows, we have Polaris, we have Arcticat, we have DigiKey, we have Central Boiler. You've heard all these names in the past, I guess this is a first step. I'd be more than happy to do something with all businesses in the future as we move forward, but for me this is the first step. A lot of our small businesses that we have in my district are Main Street businesses that are fairly small that do make some capital purchases, and what I'm trying to do for those people is allow for them to keep their cash in their hand. As I mentioned in my opening comments, a lot of these businesses don't even apply for the refund simply because they don't have maybe the knowledge of the program, they don't have the time, they're busy just doing the things of just keeping their doors open. I talked to two small business owners this morning between 7 and 7:30 back in my district because we have some other issues that we're dealing with. And anything that I can do to help these small businesses out, I'm more than happy to do that, and I'm happy to have this discussion as we move forward with regards to the other businesses. Thank you for your question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do want to commend you also, because often people bring these bills forward and they have zeros in the revenue estimate because they're going to let a future legislature figure out how to pay for it, and you didn't do that. You actually recognize this actually cost the legislature money in decision making, so I appreciate that honesty in the bill. Thank you.
Thank you.
Other questions from members for the author? Okay, Mr. Chair, if I may, please. Just 1 second here. Okay. I'll officially call the meeting of the House Tax Committee to order. Representative Knuth moves the minutes of February 29th, 2012. Any additions or corrections? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Knuth. Okay, now, I will move House File 1842 for possible inclusion in an omnibus tax bill. I think we've had the question, so if you want to wrap this one up, Representative Fabian.
I just want to reemphasize the fact that this is a bipartisan bill, and it does have a lot of support, and I appreciate the opportunity to be here today. Representative Lincheski, you can have two baby Ruth bars, so
okay.
Thank you.
Okay, and we appreciate that. So I will move that House File 1842 be recommended for possible inclusion in an omnibus tax bill. So with that, okay, House File 1890. Now, Representative Fabian, this was for House File 1842. Now we've got House File 1890. Did you want that bill heard?
Yes, I would, sir. I'd like to move that bill, please.
Okay. Okay. I'll
move you
House
want
File 1890.
Well, oh. Let me send a text to my LA. I've got more Snickers bars upstairs. So.
Okay. Okay. I will move House File 1890 for possible inclusion in an omnibus tax bill. Please describe your bill, House File 1890. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is a kind of a unique bill. A lot of you are probably familiar with the fact that I live in northwest Minnesota. You've heard that over and over again. One of the things that's happened to us in our part of the state is when the bovine TB infection broke out in cattle and deer, it was located in northwest Minnesota, particularly around a small community that's called Skyme. And as a result of that, many, many steps were taken to make sure that, number one, the disease did not get out of control. There was a broad group of people that worked on this, including the cattle producers in northwest Minnesota, and of course the Cattlemen's Association all across the state, because the bovine TB outbreak in northwest Minnesota affects the entire cattle industry and the entire state of Minnesota. As a result of that, the Board of Animal Health came into the into northwest Minnesota along with the DNR, and they put in place a lot of things that were going to limit the ability of the disease to spread either from the area where we live and the producers farm and so forth, or across state lines. It's extremely important that we make sure that the bovine TB is contained in a small area. As a result of that, there were some restrictions and so forth that were placed upon the producers in our area, and I've handed out a copy of that. You should have that. I hopefully have that, and you can see what the restrictions are that were in place. One of the things that happened because of the expenses involved in being able to follow the requirements and the restrictions that have been placed on local producers with regards to testing of the animals for bovine TB, with regards to having high fences. They have to have a 8-foot high fence. It has to be locked starting November 15th. They need to keep the deer out of the cattle feed, whether it's silage or hay, because the deer were some of the transmitters of the disease. There was extensive testing in the deer herds. Thousands of deer have been checked over the years. The expense to the local producers has been fairly large. One of the things that the legislature did in the past, again in the bipartisan way, was to implement a property tax credit for the producers in our part of the state. And what the property tax credit was designed to do was to allow for them to recover some of their expenses. I have constituents, friends, and neighbors whose herds were taken through the buyout program and so forth, a lifetime of work had gone into some of these herds, 500-600 cattle, and it took a long time to get them up to those levels. The property tax credit was something that was put in place. Because of the way the legislation was written, the property tax credit went away in the last session, or in the last year, because the legislation was written to say that when we achieved TB-free status in the state of Minnesota, which is a great thing to have, our cattle industry is very thankful that we've accomplished that, they also had the tax credits go away. The Board of Animal Health has kept in place for the producers in a very small area, there's 22 producers now basically who are affected by the continued restrictions that are being placed upon them. For example, if I had a herd of cattle and I had pasture land and I took part in the buyout program from the state, I am not allowed to bring new cattle into my pasture land, nor am I allowed to rent my pasture land to one of my neighbors. And if you're familiar with pasture land, for the most part, you really can't gain any income off of that land through any other means. It's generally not land that would be used for growing a crop, soybeans or wheat or whatever. This is marginal land, we would refer to it. So it's taken away the ability of the producers to be able to get their income off of this. What I'm simply doing is trying to reinstate the bovine TB tax credit in this legislation until we get full clearance from the Board of Animal Health. And I have Beth Thompson here, who's the senior veterinarian with the Board of Animal Health. I'd like to have her come down and maybe answer some of the questions that we have. Thank you.
Okay, we will hear from her. Is there anyone, come on down, please. Is there anyone else in the audience that wishes to testify for this bill or with concerns on this bill? Okay, a couple things. First of all, I've moved House File 1890 for possible inclusion in an omnibus tax bill. Let's get it in the shape the author would like. Is that your amendment, the A2 amendment?
Yes, it is, Mr. Chair.
Could you briefly describe what you're doing?
Okay, what we're doing here, and I have Steve Hines here, too, from House Fiscal Staff. Okay, research who can explain. This is a technical thing in here that's going to, and I've worked with revenue on this, and he will be able to explain this maybe a little bit better than I can.
Okay, let's do that. Normally we just need to get the bill in the shape the author like, but let's, as long as Mr. Hines is here, let's just have him talk about the A2 amendment. And members, we're on the A2 amendment right now, and I'll move the H189082 amendment. Also, I'd like to say, since there's property tax issues here, this bill will be sent over to the property tax division so that the property tax committee can look at this, so it's had a full vetting in that area since so we're going a little bit just the opposite we normally would, but that's fine. Mr. Hines, to the A2 amendment, please, sir.
Mr. Chair, Steve Hines from House Research. Very briefly, the only reason that we need the A2 amendment is the existing language calls for this credit to be reported to the Department of Revenue on the abstract of tax list. And for Pay 12, this credit is right now not in place because of, as Representative Fabian stated, it was declared a TB-free zone. So the bill is providing that in Pay 12, because property tax statements is too late in the process to catch them, there will actually be, the counties will issue a check to the landowners for Pay 12. And so this just provides a different way that that information gets reported to the Department of Revenue, because it's outside the normal way we would have that information communicated. So it just provides for a separate report on this kind of unique situation with Pay 12.
Questions for Mr. Hines? Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Mr. Hines, to that. So now we have the bill 1890 as amended. You had someone that wished to testify on this, and then members will open it up for questions of the witness, and then we'll go to the author, because I don't believe there's anyone else that wants to testify regarding this bill as amended. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Beth Thompson. I'm a senior veterinarian for the Board
of Animal Health. Is that better?
Welcome to the committee.
The Board of Animal Health, starting in 2005-2006, had a big job in front of it. That was when bovine tuberculosis was found in northwestern Minnesota. Representative has given you a good outline of some of the items that producers in that area had to do, restrictions, requirements for that area. I believe the representative has provided you with a letter dated October 12th that gives you a good outline of what was expected after TB-free status was declared in October of 2011, and especially in paragraph 3 of that letter. It tells those producers in the smaller management zone that they will be required to continue on with certain things. Just for your information, there was a larger modified accredited advanced zone, and that's the zone that went away in October of 2011. What remains is what we call the management zone, and that's the zone where we found the TB-positive deer. And that zone contains 22 producers who still have cattle. Additionally, the representative has provided you with a list of the actual requirements and restrictions in that area. All of those herds within that area need a whole herd test every year. Those herds need to do 60-day testing or movement testing if breeding cattle are moving out of their herds. They need to go through a risk assessment every year. They also have, if we put up fences in that area, there are fence inspections. And in addition to that, they need to call in and let us know if they're moving any animals out of their herd, and we track those animals. The increased cost to the producers really relate to those testing requirements. They have to have people there to help them out with the testing, possibly take time off work to help out with that testing. The test is a two-day project. So you inject on one day, you read the test on a separate day. In addition to that, going through the fencing inspections, the risk assessments, and as the representative mentioned, there is also the buyout program where the people that went into the buyout can't bring cattle back onto that land, that pasture land. That's a very short synopsis, and if there's any questions about the requirements, I'd be happy to answer.
Ms. Thompson, how long is it that they can't bring cattle back on that land if they were in the buyout program?
The statute, and I don't have, Mr. Chair, the statute, I believe it's 35, it's in Chapter 35, states that once Minnesota is declared TB-free and the board allows those producers to bring cattle back onto their land.
Okay.
So it's a two-prong requirement, yes.
The judgment of the board. Okay. Okay. Questions for Ms. Thompson, then it'd be my intention to go to Ms. Schill for the revenue note. Any questions for Ms. Thompson first? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Schill, as far as the revenue note, could you describe what's going on with that?
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members. Kathy Schill, House Fiscal. I'm looking at the revenue analysis dated February 21, 2012. The impact to the general fund, including the tuberculosis credit plus property tax and income tax interactions, total a revenue loss of $70,000 and fiscal 13. Now remember, that's the payment in the calendar year 12 that shows up in fiscal 13. And then once again, you'll see that similar impact, a revenue loss in fiscal 14 of $62,000. I gave you a background sheet. It has like a big circle around a set of tables. You can compare the revenue estimate to this particular page out of the catalog of budget activities. You can see where we had anticipated that the cost of the program would be in the vicinity of $420, $430 million per year. The revenue note, the decrease in the amount of money is because that zone has shrunk down to the 22 producers in the 12 townships that Representative Fabian has talked about. So the impact is significantly less than what we had anticipated for this program before it was declared TB-free.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you. Just a clarification. She said million, and I think she intended to say thousand.
Thousand, sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
70, sorry.
Thousand, million, billion, it's all.
Yeah.
Whatever. Few zeros. Okay, questions for Ms. Schill. Thank you for that then. Now we're at the bill as amended. Questions, and again, members, this does go over to the property tax division. That's where we're going to be sending it. Questions? Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Fabian and Mr. Chair, maybe more for you. This also is something that, you know, has had broad bipartisan support. In fact, Representative Coonan, I think, just left, but he was a major, one of the key legislators who got this done in the legislature, and we had, as you may know, all kinds of things going on, not just property. We exempted income tax, all kinds of things for the bovine issue. And I think you've described it correctly that, you know, we keyed it to once we're bovine tuberculosis free, then we don't need this tax credit anymore. And as if the DNR, whoever it is still doing testing, you're trying to recoup that cost. And so I understand kind of what you're about here. And, you know, I one thought I had is, Mr. Chair, as you think these tax credits through, and I know most people love tax credits. I don't happen to be one of those people. But, you know, this is an example where, you know, who should be paying for this is the ag chair, not you. When you get your target, it's the ag chair, and I don't even know who the ag chair is, but they should be paying for this program. I think last time we, you know, I always felt strongly, and I think this committee is bipartisanly kept, if you're going to have a tax credit, you need to keep it in the purview of the tax chair, or you got chairs out there thinking they're going to do tax policy. But all of these can really be converted into grants, except for a few things, when you're really keen off the income tax. And we had that problem with this before, and I think Representative Bills has a bill that's rightfully would be this committee. I think it's an income tax for veterans or something. But we have another bill on the calendar today that's like a higher ed tax credit, which really should be the higher ed chair should pay for that. I mean, these are attempts by people to those finance chairs, if that's something worth paying for, they should be paying for them, not you. But that's been the history in this area, and so I think, you know, we're down to this property tax credit. I hope you'll just work when you get your targets with everybody to try to convince some of those chairs to convert these tax credits into grants, because this money that Representative Fabian's trying to get for his constituents can be just done just as easily in a grant. They can certify they have the cost, and the ag chair can send them a check. Otherwise, you have to find it in your budget. So it's just something to think about. But I do think if you put it in your omnibus tax bill or those chairs, you do need to think through how you're going to turn it off. Because we keyed it to the feds, and now there's this other problem with the DNR. And I mean, are they going to test every year, and who's going to monitor that? So I just hope going forward you'll have a little discussion about how you're supposed to fund these other chairs' work with the speaker.
Thank you very much for those comments, and the thought had crossed my mind. And very, very good advice. Thank you for that. Representative Fabian, any other questions, first of all, for Representative Fabian? If not, we'll give you the last word, Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Lincheski, in Subdivision 4, on the second page, starting with line 2.26, this is the blink-off in here, you might say, okay, at the end. It describes in there when this goes away. And we worked very hard on this language to make sure that revenue and so forth. I have Derek Hodges here if you want to ask them a question about it. From revenue, he would be happy to do that. He told me yesterday, but it goes away when, as the language says there. So, and that's kind of up to the Board of Animal Health to give us that clearance. And hopefully, Mr. Chair, for the good of the industry, this goes away in just a year or two.
Thank you, Representative Fabian. So I'll renew my motion that House File 1890, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus tax bill. And excuse me. This will be going over to property taxes first, and it would have to come back, and then it'll sit in the full tax committee. And Representative Fabian, my room number is 585. Okay. Representative Erdahl, welcome to the tax committee, sir. Thank you, Representative Fabian. Members, we will be going to House File 1948. And I will move House File 1948. It'll be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus tax bill. And again, members, I thank you so much for not hitting the. We're going to hit the fiscal numbers and so forth, but the next few meetings we have, we're going to be looking at policy, and it'll be this committee's job then to figure out how we, if we believe some of these are worthy of being funded, on just how we do that. Chairman Erdahl, welcome to the tax committee. Again, I move House File 1948. Be recommended for possible inclusion in an omnibus tax bill. Two-year bill, Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And first, Representative Lincheski, the chair of the Agriculture Committee is the esteemed Rod Hamilton.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you. This bill impacts active duty overseas military personnel who buy cars. It exempts Minnesota sales tax payment up to $25,000 of purchase price from the motor vehicle sales tax for one time, just one purchase. They can't become a de facto dealership. These servicemen and women usually have no vehicles. They purchase overseas or from a dealership in the United States and have the cars sent to Minnesota. The purpose of this is to reward those who are risking their lives and years of service for their service, and also to encourage veterans to come back to Minnesota when they retire and pay their taxes here.
Representative Erdahl, is this a simple bill?
It is a simple bill and a fine piece of legislation.
Fine piece of legislation. Okay, with that being said, I'd like Ms. Templin, if you could please come and describe the revenue note for us on this fine piece of legislation. Ms. Templin.
Mr. Chair, Cynthia Templin, House Fiscal Staff. I am looking at the revenue estimate for 1942, House File 1942, dated February 28th. And this proposal has no general fund impact. It would have all non-general fund impact.
Ms. Templin, this is House File 1948.
That's...
Mr.
Chair, I'm sorry, I must have garbled my words, but I am looking at House File 1948 as
okay,
well.
Thank you.
And this estimate, again, has no general fund impact. It would be all non-general fund impact. And the effective date for this proposal is Fiscal 13, and the revenue impact starts in Fiscal 13 with a total estimated revenue loss of $50,000 to the highway user tax distribution fund and the transit assistance fund. And then in fiscal 14, the revenue loss is $90,000. And in fiscal 15, the revenue loss is the same. Just pulling a piece from the revenue analysis detail, the estimate is based on an assumed 60 vehicles being purchased.
Okay.
That's all I have.
Questions for Ms. Templin? Representative Lesh.
I have a question for the office.
Okay. Any questions for Ms. Templin? Representative Erickson.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Templin, what other credits, I'll call them, come from the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund? Are there other examples that you can share with us where we're using that money for, in my case, I call this a credit?
Ms. Templin?
Mr. Chair, I believe there may be other small tax credits affecting those transportation funds. I could just go, if I just need a few minutes, I can go back and check the tax expenditure report and get back to you.
Sure, just get back to me.
Representative Erickson, is that okay? Okay, other questions for Ms. Templin? Thank you very much, Ms. Templin. Now, is there anyone in the audience that wishes to testify for this bill or with concerns on this bill, 1948, House File 1948? Okay, questions for the author from members. Representative Lesh.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erdahl, where did the idea for this bill come from?
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Lesh, from one of my constituents.
Representative
one of my many constituents who have very fine ideas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Another question. Representative Erdahl, have you ever driven into the parking lot of an armory on drill weekend for the Minnesota National Guard or Red Bulls? Any of those armories that have for National Guard soldiers, have you ever visited a parking lot of an armory on one of those weekends?
Representative Erdahl.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lesh, when I was a member, yes.
Okay.
Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So then you probably know we have in those parking lots two kinds of cars. We have deployment cars and we have non-deployment cars. And you can tell the deployment cars because they're usually some decked out Humvee with silver spinners and maybe some ground effects on some of the cars. And I know that for our Joes, in fact, my Joes who are over there right now, aren't taxed on their salary. On the money that they get. And they build up a nice little nest egg while they're over there because a lot of stuff is taken care of for them. And they have a chance, as opposed to many other members of the public that have ongoing costs for living expenses here stateside, they can build up a nice chunk of change. And unfortunately, a lot of my Joes get in the position of blowing it all on a deployment car. And you can see that in the parking lot sometimes. So I guess I'm wondering why we would encourage the building up of that nest egg on a depreciating asset, which is really cool, because my Joes, they're proud of two things. They're proud of their tats, and they're proud of their cars. And it's really cool to have a nice car. But when we see those deployment cars, especially some of the officers and some of the senior NCOs, we think, gosh, this was the one opportunity you had to put money away and really build up a nest egg and give yourself a leg up that a lot of other people don't have. And so I don't know. It's not really a question. It's just kind of some comments. I can't say that if I wasn't in that same position deployed that I wouldn't want a sweet ride when I landed back home, too. I really would. But with the benefit of 20 years hindsight, I'm certainly glad that I didn't do that. So that's all, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Lesch. Representative Loeffler.
Mr. Chair, could I respond to that,
to the Lesch comments, Representative Erdahl.
Well, again, first of all, this is not getting Ferraris and things out of this. This is, you know, up to $25,000 in value. And it had very, positive testimony from Representative Leidiger, who after, I don't know, he's been at least 20 years active duty, felt that this was an important piece to put in, saying that, again, these people, for the most part, don't have cars, and it just, you know, it's not a big deal. It's not a lot of money for them, but it sends a message to them that we are thankful for their service and also encourages them, I would hope, to come to Minnesota.
Representative Loeffler. Or to Representative Lesch.
Just a brief question, and hopefully it doesn't go too far, Mr. Chair, but I my question is, had you considered because most of these soldiers and airmen coming back, they're going to, if they were at all responsible overseas, they're going to have the money for a car. But had you considered some other benefit other than encouraging to spend that nest egg on a depreciating asset, something like an appreciating asset? And I'm not you know, necessarily pro capital gains exemptions or anything, but that's one example that I would thought of, or some other appreciating asset, physical asset like a home or something. Had you considered that?
Representative Lesch is coming around. Never at all.
Trust me, I'm not.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lesch, no, I haven't. As I said before, this is a request brought to me by a constituent who basically resented having to go to the courthouse and pay his sales tax on this. He felt that after his service that he didn't expect to have to do that. So, you know, certainly in other bills and in other thoughts could be put into something like this, but I'm today acting just on the request of a constituent.
Representative Lesch. Thank you, Representative Lesch. Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Erdahl, I didn't know there was a military advantage program where you can buy cars when you're deployed, get a really good deal. And I suspect when you're kind of, if you're not in the firefight and you're kind of bored on one of those bases, looking at car catalogs is probably a fascinating discussion. But come back to earlier hearings that we've had, and you haven't been here, Representative Erdahl, but we've had some really interesting discussions about helping our Main Street businesses that are competing with online businesses and whether or not our tax policies really work as we're currently implementing them against some of those Main Street businesses. And I think this raises that same issue, because this actually would create even, they get a special advantage buying program called this military advantage program to get the car, and then we're going to give them potentially another break to incent them even more to purchase when they're overseas and bring it home, as opposed to buying from a dealer in Minnesota who would be thrilled to have, whether it's the best investment of their life or not, that deployment car bought off of their lot in Minnesota, as opposed to a lot somewhere else in the world. And so I have some reservations about, you know, putting this kind of money into something that incents people to buy away from our Main Street businesses. I also do think that the loss of these revenues are would be to funds that are right now underfunded. I mean, I think all of us hear about the potholes, and we know that our transit systems, both in Greater Minnesota and Metro, are struggling as well. So I have some concerns about that, but I also would like to you to address that issue of should we be incenting people to buy outside our country rather than wait until they come home and then buying it from the local car dealer.
Representative Erdahl?
Chairman Davidson, Representative Loeffler, rarely can one directly alleviate someone's concerns, as I will do for you now. 90% of the purchases are made from local dealerships. In other words, these people in Europe, Afghanistan, wherever they are, through this program can make the purchase with the local dealership. So it is happening in the state.
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you. I didn't understand how it worked. It just talks about shipping a car that was purchased
that's
overseas.
The 10%. The 10% could be shipped from overseas.
Other questions for Chair Erdahl? Okay, I will move the House File 1940. Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Erdahl, I heard you say that you're doing this for one constituent. Have you heard this to be an issue among many of our military, or have you just heard from this one person?
Chairman Erdahl.
Chair Davids, Representative Erickson, directly contacted by one constituent, but since I became aware of this situation, I've talked to other service personnel who also emphasized that this was a good idea. And again, Representative Leidiger, who has extensive military experience, is very high on this program. And to answer one other question, the hope is, again, that these people are rolling over the potholes in Minnesota, not cruising down some Arizona highway.
Representative Erickson?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, I will renew my motion that House Bill 1948 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus tax bill. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We will now go to House File 2210.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members.
Thank you, Representative Erdahl. Representative Banyan, I will move House File 2210. We'll put it before us now. And I believe there is an amendment. So, members, in your packet, you have House File number 2210. There is this an author's amendment? To get the bill.
Chair, I don't have a copy of the amendment with me. Thank you.
Representative Banning, is that your amendment?
Yes, it is, Mr. Chairman. If I could ask you to move it for me.
Yeah, I will move the H2210A1 amendment to get the bill in the shape the author would prefer. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. We now have House File 2210 as amended. Representative Banning, welcome to the Tax Committee. If you could please present your bill, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the opportunity to present this bill to you. And this bill is for an internship for students who would go to the main streets of Greater Minnesota and work in a business there, with the idea that many students who go into internships at a business will end up being caught, will be end up perhaps working within that business with a job further on. As Mr. Burton will tell you in just a moment, there's a lot of research been done. I think there is information in your packet which he'll explain to describe to you the loss of young families working in Greater Minnesota. One fact that I frequently cite is that I don't have 70% of my students come from the Twin Cities to my econ program at St. Cloud State, but I can tell you, based on the zip codes of where we send our requests, our newsletter and requests for alumni contributions, 70% of them now live in some place in the 7-county metro. We'd like to see if we couldn't encourage them to think about staying someplace within Greater Minnesota. We think it's vital to having a thriving rest of the state. And to explain that more, I would ask the chair to recognize Mr. Burton at this time.
Okay. And with that, first of all, before we do that, I have a list of a couple testifiers, of Dan Larson and Jack Linehan. Is there anyone else that would like to testify on behalf of this bill or with concerns thereof? Okay, please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, my name is J.D. Burton. I am with the law firm of Flaherty & Hood, and I'm here on behalf of the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities. The CGMC represents over 75 cities across Greater Minnesota. I want to thank Representative Banyan, Mr. Chair, and the committee for the opportunity to speak on behalf of this legislation.
Welcome to the committee, sir.
Thank you. The first question you may be asking is, why is the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities involved with this legislation, and what is our interest in this program? There's really two reasons. The first is that our members recognize that a healthy business community is important for our healthy city. Our economic well-being depends on having a thriving business community and both a public and a private sector that's working. It's why we solicited information over a five-month period from cities, local chambers of commerce across Greater Minnesota, economic development foundations, and others to learn what programs would help these businesses grow. And one recommendation that they made is for a program just like this. We also want to make sure that there are ample opportunities for students and young adults who work in Greater Minnesota and raise a family there. The Greater Minnesota Internship Program would provide a small tax credit to businesses located in Greater Minnesota who hire an intern from a Minnesota college, university, or other higher education institution. The student must be paid and receive an academic credit. The refundable tax credit would equal 40% of the amount paid to the intern, or $1,250, whichever is less. The credit would be limited to 5 interns per year per employer, and the program would be administered by the Office of Higher Education, who would work in processing the credits with the institutions and the businesses. OHE would also work with the Department of Revenue in coordinating the credit number and the amount authorized for the participating employers. Finally, the business must certify that they would not have hired the student without the tax credit. The total appropriation for this program is $1.25 million per year, or $2.5 million for the biennium, and the appropriation comes from the general fund. The second question you may be asking is, why is this program only for Greater Minnesota and not the entire state? Well, the data that we put together shows that there is a workforce gap between the metro area and Greater Minnesota. For example, the handout that's in your packet shows that Greater Minnesota's workforce has a larger percentage approaching or past retirement. Greater Minnesota also struggles to hold on to the population after the college years. Now, there's actually slightly more people in Greater Minnesota between 18 to 24 years old, but then the population shifts dramatically in favor of the metro area between the ages of 25 to 64, with the largest gap being between the ages of 25 and 34. And there are also more people with at least a two-year degree percentage-wise in the metro area across every age group. So this bill is helping to balance out those disparities and increase the number of graduates who can look for work and find work in Greater Minnesota. We believe this program is good both for students and for businesses. Internships in general are excellent ways for students to get work experience and connect with future employers, and this program expands that field because there will be more opportunities than there were before. The program would expand the number of internships available by about 1,000, meaning that there will be 1,000 more students who may have an opportunity for a paid internship that they didn't have before. And since this internship is paid, you may have more students who couldn't qualify, but maybe would accept an internship because it is paid. And I should note that the students that would qualify for this would come from institutions across the state, not just Greater Minnesota colleges, but from the U of M and the Twin Cities, from the private colleges here, across Greater Minnesota. We also believe this internship program is good for businesses by enhancing the connection between a business and a student and introducing that business to a potential future employee. This not only builds a relationship between that student and the business, but it also builds a new relationship with the college, the university, and the student body, whereby you may have potential future internships and opportunities down the road. And then lastly, it introduces students to businesses in Greater Minnesota and those communities that they may not have considered before. And there are business organizations that are supporting this legislation. In addition to the insight that several Greater Minnesota chambers provided in drafting this proposal, the Worthington Chamber of Commerce, the Albert Lea Freeborn County Chamber of Commerce, the Laverne and Crookston Chambers of Commerce have all passed resolutions in support of this legislation. As well, the Worthington Economic Development Corporation itself has also passed a resolution, and it's my understanding that there are others that are considering it at this time. So we believe that they believe that this program is good for opening up new opportunities for businesses across Greater Minnesota. So again, I want to thank you for the opportunity to bring this bill before your committee, and I thank you on behalf of the CGMC for your support for Greater Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Burton. Questions for Mr. Burton, Representative Paymar?
Mr. Chair, I was just wondering.
If you could speak to the microphone, please.
How you compiled all this data about the differences between Greater Minnesota and the Seven County metro area?
Did Mr. Burton,
your firm do this?
Mr. Burton?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Paymar, it was our firm put it together looking at the most recent census data.
Representative Paymar?
That's okay. I guess I'd have a question of the author at some point.
Okay.
I'll wait.
Okay. Representative Paymar, it's okay if we go through witnesses first,
yep.
And then we'll go to the author. Thank you, Representative Paymar. Other questions of Mr. Burton? Representative Aaronson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I like internships a lot, but I'm not sure if I polled my employers in East Central Minnesota if they would say that they wouldn't hire an intern, maybe not at $16.68 an hour, but without a tax credit, because that's just more work for them when they do their taxes. We're expanding the tax code, Mr. Chair. So, you know, I really like this program, but I'm not sure. And I will ask mine over the weekend. You know, would you hire an intern, or do you have to get a tax credit to do it? I love internship programs. We have lots of them around here. I don't think they get paid. I always give mine gifts of money, but, I don't know if we want to go down this path.
Now you're making us all look bad because I don't give them money.
I want the interns to get paid. I just don't know if we need to offer a tax credit.
To Mr. Burton, Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Burton. Actually, every kid would love to have an internship, and I know that a lot of the students that I represent are doing free internships, and it's really tough because they're taking out loans, paying for higher ed, and they can't get anyone to even offer them any pay. And so I think that this isn't a statewide issue. But you have some unique resources in Greater Minnesota that we don't have in the metro. One is a four-year Minsku institution. So I think part of the reason why some of those students of yours, Representative Banyan, are now in the metro area is because they came from the metro area. You know, they wish they could have stayed at home in the cities, but to get the U only takes a few of the top performers out of every high school class because of its pursuit of excellence strategy, and there's pros and cons to that. But so their options are a two-year Minsku program in the Twin Cities, an expensive private college, or to go to the Minsku campuses across the state. And many of them are urban kids or suburban kids. They'll go off to the cornfields of Marshall. They'll go up to the woods in Bemidji. They'll go to the kind of more urban areas of St. Cloud. But then they come home because that's the culture and the community that they feel most at home in. And so I think that there's a lot of, and that's, I think, why your 18 to 24-year-old numbers are up for that little period is because they do live in Greater Minnesota while they get their education and then they come back. But one of the things that you have that I've always thought was just a wonderful resource, and it offers opportunities that nothing comparable in the metro offers, is your initiative funds, which were established in a partnership with the McKnight Foundation and state appropriations. And their whole purpose is to promote the economic development and well-being of Greater Minnesota. They're like, you know, big foundations, and they do a lot in job development, economic development. And have you approached them about potentially playing a role in supporting internships as opposed to using a tax code provision that would only apply? I mean, it quite honestly would irritate all the employers in the metro area to go through their tax forms and find out there's something that they can't apply for. But, you know, it seems to me that given the mission of the initiative funds and what they've really focused themselves on, which is economic development in Greater Minnesota, that could be a potential resource. And have you talked with them about this?
Mr. Burton?
Mr. Chair, Representative Loeffler, yes, not all of the initiative foundations, but part of our research efforts over the past fall did include conversations with two of the initiative foundations. And while I would have to look back on the notes to see if they had talked about this issue specifically, because our outreach was more what do you think versus what do you think of this, the internship and finding ways for students was a discussion point in general. But we haven't approached them about creating a type of a program just for internships like this.
Representative Loeffler?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I mean, I do think that that's an opportunity that should be explored. And I also think that in kind of echoing Representative Lancheski's statement said if this were to be funded, I think this really should be a grant program out of higher education rather than out of as a unique provision in tax code, because I can see a bazillion committees starting to offer little incentives to this kind of business or that kind of business. I could offer up at least 25 of them in Health and Human Services alone, just brainstorming with myself. So I do think we have to be careful about, you know, little grant programs turned into credits.
Thank you, Representative Lothar. Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to point out, Representative, in light of Representative Loeffler's comments, that Metro State Campus on Dayton's Bluff is, according to my map, 9.5 miles from your house. And I realize it's St. Paul, so it may seem like Greater Minnesota, but I assure you, it's pretty close, and it's in the metro area.
Representative Chairman and Representative Lesh. Actually, I love Metro State, but it is really, its mission is for returning students more than people coming right out of high school at 18, and it does a wonderful job in doing that. But it really has focused and marketed itself and created a program that was really, that's more oriented towards that age group, and I think it fills a wonderful niche. But I think, I find, at least talking to my high school graduates, they don't consider it the campus they're looking for. They're looking for a place that has dorms and has a lot more active student life, the kind of thing that 18 and 19-year-olds are looking for.
Representative
Lesh.
Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, just a couple of comments and then maybe a question. You know, we do have internships that are available, at least in some of our MNSCU systems. I don't know if up in Representative Banyan's area, if St. Cloud Technical College has any internships or not, but they do. I know that where I'm headed with this, that some of the technical colleges in the metro area that I'm familiar with have internships, but in addition to what the criteria is here, they guarantee a job at the end of the internship as well. So if your real goal is to retain people in certain areas, that might be something that you'd want to consider as part of the criteria for participation. The one program that comes to mind, my wife is a retired administrator at Hennepin Technical College, and they had a program there called the Ford Asset Program. And the dealership would guarantee then, when you went through an internship program there, that you would have a job at the end of that internship. So something to consider if this were to move forward. The other thing I'm trying to remember, back in, for about 20 years, I chaired one education committee or another, and during the Carlson administration, the other Carlson, we established an internship program. I don't know if that still exists or what the criteria is on that, but that may be something that we would want to look at as well, and to see if it's still one. Is it still in statute, Representative Erickson?
I would suspect it is, because yeah, we have a lot. It's never been used in statute.
Yeah, he was proposing a lot of things when he was governor along that that line, and I know at least at that point in time some of that was passed, and I think an internship. Well, I know an internship program was passed. And it involved high school students and I think students in at least some of our two-year institutions. I don't remember if the four-year institutions were covered or not. I happen to be one that thinks there's value in internship programs, but I'm just making a couple of suggestions here and asking a couple of questions that I think we should get some answers to if you don't know the answers already. And maybe one of you could tell me if that internship program still exists.
Mr. Burton?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not familiar with that program, but we'd be happy to, after the hearing, to take a look at that and see if we can find out some background. Yeah.
And then, Mr. Chairman, my final comment is, I know this is geared toward Greater Minnesota, but we do have pockets within the metropolitan area that are experiencing high unemployment that could probably also benefit from internship programs. I represent a suburban district, and one of the highest levels of unemployment is in the northwest suburbs. And you know, so that we all are aware of the high unemployment, especially among minority communities in the center cities, but even in some of the suburbs with the current economic climate, unemployment is quite high. In my area, we have a lot of blue-collar, skilled workers, many of their sons and daughters wanting to go into some of those same trades and so on, and internships might benefit them as well.
Okay, thank you. Members, we are going to have to watch the clock here a little bit. We've got two more witnesses to this bill, a revenue note, and then Representative Bills does have some folks that have come in to testify, I believe, also, so we'll want to get to that bill. But we won't want to cut off any debate here either. So, Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just wanted to clarify who eligible employer is and if it means you could be either a nonprofit or a for-profit employer. And then I'm gathering that we've got the wage set at minimum wage, but I don't understand the $16 level that you're talking about. You're saying the employer pays an effective minimum wage rate at when they get the credit, after the effect of the credit? What is the wage rate?
Mr. Burton?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Runbeck, the wage requirements are a minimum wage. The 16 number that I think you referenced is dealing with hours. You're requiring a certain number of weeks and a certain number of hours that an intern works. But I believe there was a fiscal note that came back that anticipated most interns would be paid higher than the minimum wage. But our bill starts at that level as a minimum.
Representative Runbeck?
A second question, in regards to the nonprofit, we did look at that question. Mr. Chair, I know I had a representative conversation with Joel this morning about this. I would feel more comfortable if he explained that, the answer to that question, if that'd be okay, Mr. Chair.
Is Mr. Michael around here, please?
Mr. Michael, excuse me.
Mr. Michael?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Runbeck, the bill is somewhat ambiguous on this. It is a refundable credit, so you would think in theory there isn't a requirement that you have a tax liability, and so, for example, an exempt entity, a nonprofit, could in theory qualify for it, but throughout the bill, reference is made to taxpayers qualifying, and I think depending upon how revenue would construe that, it may well be that they would say an exempt entity that has no, otherwise would have no filing obligation and no obligation to ever pay tax, would not be a qualified taxpayer. So if the intent is to make it available to nonprofit employers, I think the sensible thing would be for the committee to resolve that by substituting the word employer for everywhere taxpayer appears in the bill. The intent is to limit it to for-profit businesses, probably okay to just leave it a taxpayer, although we might want to clarify and limit it to for-profit businesses.
Thanks, Joel.
Thank you. That's fine.
Thanks,
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Michael. Representative Runbeck?
Fine, thank you.
Representative Knuth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Banyan, I appreciate the bill. As you know, working in higher ed, as you do, there's a lot of young people coming through who want to get experience and can't afford, frankly, to take on an unpaid internship. And my question is, and I think it goes to what Representative Lincheski was saying earlier, and maybe you have said this kind of indirectly, why this wouldn't be a grant program, which would take care of, I think, the issue with the nonprofit versus the for-profit, and wouldn't necessarily put the implementation, the administration within our Department of Revenue. So why try to do this as a tax credit versus trying to do it as a direct appropriation, potentially from the higher ed committee budget? If you could just comment on that.
Representative Banyan or Mr. Burton?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Knuth, I don't know that we have really thought out how it would work as a grant program. The idea is to provide a subsidy that's based in part on how many hours are being worked and so on. So administering a grant program per se may be a little bit more difficult in those circumstances. the goal of the bill really is, again, to encourage students to take internships in Greater Minnesota, consider living in Greater Minnesota, and you know, the mechanism by which we provide that encouragement is, you know, is certainly up for discussion.
Representative Knuth. Okay, with that, we will go to the next witness. We're going to call up Jack Linehan from the finest institution of higher learning ever.
What colors, please?
Got the colors, too, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, and then provide your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. For the record, my name is Jack Linehan, and I'm the Student Senate President at Winona State University and a board member of the Minnesota State University Student Association, MSUSA. And MSUSA represents 75,000 state university students in Bemidji, Mankato, Moorhead, Metropolitan, St. Cloud, Southwest, and Winona, and I was raised in Lindstrom, Minnesota.
Welcome to committee, sir.
Thank you. So I'm here to address the committee about the impact that House File 2210 would have on Minnesota students and our respective communities. The opportunity to participate in a paid internship experience has excited nearly every student which I've discussed this proposal with. Paid internships are disappearing, and with recent enforcement of federal labor laws, many businesses have been reluctant to take on unpaid interns. Without an internship, our traditional students are entering the workforce with little or none of the experience needed to supply Minnesota's workforce demands. If internships are offered, the majority of them are offered in openings in the Twin Cities. This means that the majority of our students cannot participate in internships until the summer months, and even then it's very costly for rural residents, such as myself, to intern in the Twin City area. So students at Winona State University are facing increasingly high tuition costs that are becoming unmanageable. This has led to more and more of our students competing for a scarce amount of unskilled labor openings in our respective communities. The majority of these positions are in unrelated fields to our areas of study and provide little of the real-world work experience that business leaders in Minnesota demand of our graduates. Given the opportunity, any student I know would choose a minimum wage internship over other part-time opportunities, even if they were higher paid. So I've worked doing research for a Fortune 500 company in Winona, and it's provided me a stronger connection with my own community. I wish other students had opportunities that I've had to be able to participate in. Despite these stereotypes, or some stereotypes, most of our students are hungry for the ability to provide something of value to our community after 22 years of preparation and learning. These relationships between students and Greater Minnesota businesses benefit all parties and could be critical in protecting rural Minnesota residents and our industry our communities rely on. So I'd like to thank you for your time, and I'll now stand for any questions if the committee has, particularly on kind of what the state university student perspective would be.
Thank you, President Linehan. Any questions for the president? Thank you very much, sir. Next we have Mr. Dan Larson with the Minnesota Rural Counties Caucus, and then we will bring up Ms. Templin. We will have questions of the author, and then we will go to the final bill on the agenda for the day. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Mr. Chairman, member Dan Larson, today representing the Minnesota Rural Counties Caucus, and here today in support of the bill and in appreciation of Representative Banyan for bringing it forward.
Welcome to the committee, sir.
Thank you. It's no secret that Greater Minnesota businesses have had a difficult time retaining trained and educated workers. We think that this bill addresses can become a component to begin addressing that concern, and so we like the bill. My testimony is brief today, but we want to reiterate we appreciate the bill moving forward, and we urge your support. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Larson. Any questions for Mr. Larson? Thank you very much, sir. Ms. Templin, if you could please join us and go over the revenue note, please.
Cynthia Templin, House Fiscal Staff. I'm looking at the revenue estimate for House File 2210, dated February 22nd. And just to clarify, there was reference to by a testifier that this would be an appropriation. Again, to clarify, this would be there would be an estimated revenue loss starting in fiscal 13 of $1.263 million, with the same revenue impact every year after. So this would not be an appropriation. Again, it's an estimated revenue loss. The effective date for this tax credit would be tax year 12, and the impact for the tax year 12 is shifted to fiscal 13. In addition, I should state that there is also a included within the revenue loss of $1.263 million is a $13,000 1% administrative fee that would go to the Office of Higher Ed. The 1% is again capped, and it is based on the amount, the maximum amount of $1.25 million in the bill for the tax credits.
Thank you, Ms. Templin. Any questions for Ms. Templin? All right. Thank you very much. Representative Bannion, do you have any other testifiers, or is there anyone else in the audience who wishes to testify either in favor or with concerns about the bill?
I have nobody else that I invited.
All right. Anyone from the public who wishes to testify? All right. I don't see anything else. So any other questions for Representative Bannion about his bill? All right, I think we're finished then. Any final words from you, Representative Bannion?
Well, thank you for the discussion today. I just point out a couple quick points that you may wonder about. We've had discussion with Director Pogemiller from the Office of Higher Education, who's indicated they feel that the plan as in the bill is workable, and that the 1% administrative fee is appropriate. They'll have to work out discussions. They'll continue to discuss it with Department of Revenue, but the idea of what the form would look like and so on. We talked that through, and it sounds like we're on our way to having something that would work if you should decide to pass this tax credit along, and it should become law. I think for the rest of it, particularly given that you've got another bill to hear, Madam Chair, I think we can probably just let the rest of the discussion happen at another time. But thank you.
All right. Thank you, Representative Bannion. With that, I will renew the Chair's motion to hold House File 2210 as amended over for possible inclusion in a later bill. Thank you. All right. Representative Bills, if you are ready, we will hear from you on House File 2139.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, committee members.
Would you like to move your bill, and then we'll...
Yes, or I'd be honored if Madam Chair would do that.
I'd be happy. So I move consideration of House File 2139 to be held over for possible inclusion. And we do have an amendment. This is
yes,
an author's
ma'am.
Amendment. All right. So if you'd like, I'll move the H2139A2 amendment. And anything you want to say about the amendment? It looks like it's fairly brief.
It's fairly brief and just puts the bill in the form that it needs to move forward.
All right. Very good. So with that, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Thank you. We will add the amendment. And please proceed, Representative Bills.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'll be very brief due to some time constraints and the gentlemen who've traveled to be here. Last year, I sat down with members and leadership with the Red Bulls in my district where the armory is housed there. And we talked about issues and events that have been affecting these men and women. And through that discussion, I started down the road with a small business credit last year. I had a bill that, after examining, analyzing things that have gone on at the federal and state level in terms of policy, it kind of morphed into what you see before you today in 2139, and which provides a non-refundable credit for those who hire qualified veterans as laid out in Section 51 of the IRS code, and the details are in front of you. With that, I think again in terms of our time, I would, if it pleases the chair, I would ask if my testifiers could present here today.
All right. Thank you, Representative Bills. Yeah, I think that would be a good idea. So if you have your first testifier there. Sir, welcome to the committee. If you please identify yourself for the record. And
thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Don Kerr. I'm the Executive Director of the Department of Military Affairs, and I am here to testify in support of the bill today. As you know, we have a large contingent deployed currently. In fact, we're very concerned about their employment status when they return. And anything that we can do to incentivize the hiring of veterans will have a huge impact on our soldiers who are returning on this deployment. We have done surveys with that team. We expect to come back with some more refined data, but we're looking at as many as 20% of the soldiers that are deployed. That could be up to 400 individuals are planning to come back without a job, and that's a pretty significant effect, and anything we can do to help mitigate that risk and make the environment better for hiring veterans upon their return, the agency is very much in support of.
All right. Thank you, sir, for your testimony. Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question. In terms of things that you could do to encourage these returning soldiers and airmen to get their feet under them, would you consider a way to do that would be to encourage them not to blow their nest egg on a $45,000 F-150? You don't have to answer that.
Mr. Kerr, do you wish to answer, or would you like to let that
Madam Chair, I'd be happy to address that with Representative Lesh. Certainly, we do actually do quite a bit of financial counseling with our soldiers. Some is more successful than others. But that is a concern that we have, and one of the things that we do pretty aggressively on our deployment cycle support process, where we work with the families and the soldiers, both before, during, and after their deployment, to talk about things like financial management. And obviously, we have learned some lessons over the last decade of frequent deployment. But that is a concern. Prudent financial management is an important factor that contributes to stress on our team, and it's an important resiliency factor.
Follow-up, Representative Lesh. Thank you. Any other questions for Mr. Kerr at this time?
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Other testifiers, please welcome to the committee. Please provide your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Don Sidwell. I'm a small business owner in Rosemont. I'm also a retired veteran with well over 20 years of service. I served in Desert Storm. I came home from Desert Storm to a job. Because my employer did keep me employed and held my job for me, which was a good thing to do. But as a business person, I look at my return on investment. I'm in sales, and I sell homes as one of my businesses. I have two. And when I sell homes, I look at the commission. Given all things being equal, if I have two houses that are identical, I'm going to show the house with a higher commission first because I'm going to get a higher return on my investment. And that's what I think we're looking at here is a higher return on investment if we can employ more soldiers. You're going to do that several ways. You're going to do that with a good quality veteran coming home that's worked very hard. They've worked very hard for the last year of their deployment. And we're talking about soldiers deployed in a combat zone or in combat cells. The other thing, return on investment that you probably won't see right away is the mental health investment that they have. Because when they come back, after a stressful time and they have nothing to do, that grates on a person. And there's all kinds of issues that can come up that helping them get a job will alleviate a lot of those issues. And that's the return on investment that I believe is very important for this bill. It's something you're not necessarily going to see right off, but it's going to pay for itself over and over and over again. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. And I'm sorry, could you spell your name for the record?
So it's Sinwell. S as in Sam, I-N-N-W-E-L-L.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Sinwell. Any questions for this witness?
Yes. Okay.
All right. Thank you, sir. We appreciate it. And are there any other members of the audience who wish to testify today? All right, welcome. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you. I'm Jean Lee, President and Executive Director of Children's Hope International, R&R Families, and the Asian Pacific American Housing Consortium. I just want to say we do support the bill because we do have projects that will be employing veterans, and we're in the process of negotiating some terms with developers. But one of the points that I would like to raise is, and I've talked with some people in Veterans Affairs and I think Military Affairs, that on projects that are specific to construction, like with the bonding bill, construction or improvement of military or veterans facilities, that there be an extra piece as far as extra quotas or use of veterans. So right now they have a certain quota among all the other quotas as far as meeting for construction, so a developer will meet the quotas. But I'm saying if this is a military facility or veteran facility, there should be more employment of those veterans. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for the witness? All right. Thank you very much for your testimony. All right. Now I think we'll have Ms. Templin go through the fiscal note. If you would come up, please. Or excuse me, revenue estimate. Yep. Stand corrected. All right.
Cynthia Templin, House Fiscal Analysis.
Thank you, Ms.
Yes. I'm looking at the revenue estimate for House File 2139, dated February 29th. And this revenue estimate is pretty straightforward. The effective date for this tax credit is tax year 12. The federal credit for veterans is scheduled to expire December 31st, 2012. While this credit expires at the end of the year, the state credit would continue without expiration, and that affects the revenue estimate. The first year of estimated revenue loss is in fiscal 13 at $13.8 million and $14.5 million in fiscal 14 and $15.3 million. Oops, in fiscal 15. And this is all to the general fund. And that's it.
Any questions for Ms. Temple? Oh, Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Templin, it says here in the explanation that a qualified veteran is one who meets the requirements that allow an employer to qualify for the federal work opportunity credit. So can you tell me what amount of dollars flow into the state of Minnesota through that opportunity credit?
Ms. Templin.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, are you asking about the revenue loss with the proposed credit? I'm not sure.
Well, presently, Madam Chair and Ms. Templin, we must be receiving some dollars, some flow-through dollars for our work opportunity credit, are we not? And then the proposed Minnesota credit would equal the federal credit. So could you enlighten us on that?
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, there is a federal credit, and the revenue estimate shows that there are 2,700 Minnesotans, roughly, that are receiving the federal credit or who claim the federal credit that filed electronically. And the total credit amount claimed was $11,196,873.
Representative Erickson, does that address your question?
I'm still thinking, so thank you. Go ahead.
Madam Chair, House Research has some additional information.
Ms. Manzi?
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, if you look at the revenue analysis detail, and maybe we'll want to ask the Department of Revenue to speak to this, but it appears that at the bottom of the first page, the $11 million figure that Ms. Templin referenced is the amount that was claimed by on individual returns. And those were electronically filed returns, and that would increase to $12.3 million under an assumption for how much would also be claimed on paper returns. And then if you look on the back side of the revenue estimate, it appears that there was an additional $2.358 million claimed by pass-through entities. And then the next bullet on the back side provides an estimate for the amount claimed by C corporations in Minnesota, for which they don't have any direct data, but they made an assumption of the ratio of the corporate credit to the amount claimed by individuals that, if they're correct, would mean the total credit claimed by C corporations would be $110.5 million roughly. So you would need to add those three numbers together, the 110.5, the 2.3, and so on.
It's $125,165,000. And the credit revenue estimates that it'll be 10% of that $125 million will qualify for the state version.
All right, thank you. That's cleared now. Any additional questions for Ms. Templin or from our research staff? All right, thank you very much. All right, is there anyone else from the public who wishes to testify, either for or with concerns about this bill? Any other questions from members of the committee? All right. Seeing none, Representative Bills, do you want to wrap it up?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to specifically, I think he may have had to leave already, but Mr. Sinwell has taken time away from his two businesses that he runs 2 days in a row, not in a row, but 2 days to come down here, one for veterans, one for here, and I'd like to thank him and just echo his words, and you know, I always try to bring things back around to economics, and even though people sit on different sides of the rational thought and behavioralist school, I think this is somewhere where just based on marginal gain, you can come together and offer a solution. So, thank you.
Thank you, Representative Bills. And with that, I will renew my motion that House File 2139, as amended, be held over for possible inclusion in a later bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, members, that concludes our business for today. So thank the committee for their time, and good government all the time.